Welcome. I'd like to call this meeting of the Conference Committee on House File 2090 to order. Thank you all for your patience. This is legislative schedules at the end of the session. And we were hoping to start closer to 5, but Senator Latz had an important hearing over in the Senate that just wrapped up. I talked to most of the people in the room before Senator Latz came over, and what we'd like to do is have people testify as briefly as you can. We'd like your name, who you're affiliated with, and we're just focused on the Senate amendment. The underlying House File 2090, I think we know how we feel about that, but we're taking testimony on the Jensen Amendment, both pro and con. And so we'd like to have a little flavor of why you're opposed or for the provision, but we don't want you to go into your whole full statement because of the hour we have to get over to the State of the State by 6:30, and I want everybody who's here to have a chance to get on the record. And so why don't we start? We'll go in the order that people signed up with my committee administrator. So Tim Power from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, you're first, and then Tim Maluli, and then Scott Frampton. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim Power, Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. I represent, MNLA represents represents about 1,000 plus business members, a majority of whom are contractors with specialties in landscaping, hardscaping, and landscape irrigation. MNLA supports the Minnesota Subcontractors Association in the effort to support the Jensen Amendment. But many MNLA members are directly affected by the unfair practices surrounding indemnification and construction contracts. MNLA supports the Senate language in 2090. Testifying with me are two contractors, and I'd like to introduce first Tim Maluli.
Introduce. Sure, of course, thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Maluli, and I'm president of Irrigation by Design. It's a 33-year-old landscape irrigation construction and service company based in Minneapolis. And I ask you to support Senate language for the final version of HF 2090. Last year's correction of poor business practices in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 337 was an important piece of legislation, and it was the right thing to do. With duty to insure language made illegal by last year's bill, general contractors have begun to include duty to defend in construction contracts, a clear and cynical violation of the spirit of intent of last year's work. Subs bidding on a project must sign contracts in order to get work, and the contract language is generally non-negotiable in these terms. This unjustly transfers liability, and leaving last year's duty to insure language separate from duty to defend is simply not workable. I would like to introduce Scott Frampton of Landscape Renovations, who serves with me in the Minnesota Nursery Landscape Association and is a business associate.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm also a landscape contractor. My business is Landscape Renovations. We're in Afton, Minnesota. And I ask you to support HF 2090 as well in support of this duty to defend language addition. Thank you.
Thank you, and please let us know if you have more extensive comments you would like us to circulate among the committee members. We're happy to do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Next I have Aaron Dean, John Lloyd, and then Dominic, with the hard to pronounce last name, Acido. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Madam Chair. I'm Kurt Smith, and I'm appearing in lieu of Aaron Dean because, unfortunately, Mr. Dean couldn't make it today. I'm the chapter attorney for the Minnesota Subcontractors Association, and we very much support the Jensen Amendment to House File 2090 by adding the duty of defend or the language of defend to the anti-indemnity statute. To be very succinct and clear, the duty to defend from a legal standpoint has always been coupled with the duty to indemnify or to hold harmless, and it was only after the passage last year of the bill that closed the insurance loophole to the anti-indemnity statute that we started seeing contracts trying to separate the duty to defend and foist that on subcontractors and the very much high cost that goes with that. As an attorney, I know very much that the cost of defending lawsuits oftentimes far exceeds what gets paid in settlement. And so this is a serious issue. It's a question of fairness. It's the same question of fairness that we had last year. And I would point out that the House File 2090, the bill for the architects and engineers, does talk about outlawing and making void any agreement to indemnify, defend, or hold harmless. And if the Jensen Amendment, the Senate Amendment, is not included, we would have a dichotomy here where the architects and engineers have one protection that is against defending, indemnifying, and hold harmless, where contractors and subcontractors would not be on an equal same footing. And to wrap it up, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Everybody ought to be on the same footing, and that's why we support this amendment. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, my name is John Lloyd, Lloyd's Construction Services out of Savage, Minnesota. Mine went in half because it would be redundant to go over a lot of the stuff, but I just want to reiterate that every time I sign one of these contracts, my business is on the line for the negligent acts of others. If my insurance will not cover the defense, I will personally have to cover the defense. Even if my insurance company does cover the defense, they will get their money back in premiums. There's nothing fair about this. I urge you to support the Senate Amendment. Thank you.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Are you able to procure insurance policies to cover the duty to defend?
I think that's unknown at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dominic, you'll have to tell us which syllable in your last name the emphasis goes on.
Madam Chair, Dominic Spizzetto. I prefer to just go by Dominic, like sort of like Cher or Madonna, but really not quite that famous yet, but there's always hope. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents Association, and we're an organization of 700 insurance agencies throughout the state, representing over 3,000 insurance professionals, and we're here asking for some clarification. We are generally confused by the law. I'll say right off the bat that we represent both sides. We have insurance agents and risk managers that work with the general contractors. We have insurance agents and risk managers that work with the subcontractors. And we are attempting to negotiate in the middle. The problem is we don't know what the law says anymore. Last year we thought we were getting a clarification about through the anti-indemnification statutes about what was covered and what wasn't covered. We had thought we had understood that until the duty to defend appeared, which was a concept that we hadn't contemplated at the time last year when we were talking about it, and I don't remember that being discussed. And it's general insurance practice that we don't divide indemnity from the defense cost. That's not part of the package that we sell. So we're encouraging you to do two things. One is to help us clarify what is the law, and two, if you take the side of common sense in how we deal with this, so we can explain this to our agents, who therefore can explain it to their contractor clients. So we encourage you to support the Senate position, because we think that really helps clarify the intent of last year's legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next I have Mark Hughes, and then Mark Belinsky, and then Bill Straczynski. Can you come with the chair?
Hi, I'll be brief. My name is Mark Hughes, and I came here as an independent. My neighbor happens to be the CEO of American Engineering, and of course all the engineers and architects kind of are against this amendment. I think I had a chat with my neighbor, Terry Swore, and he said that they're afraid they would lose a lot of contract and a lot of revenue because of the new amendment that was just put on the other day. So I want to oppose the new amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Appreciate it. Mark Belinsky. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here on behalf of the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, as well as several large general contractors, including Krauss Anderson, Mortenson, Ryan, McGuff, Weiss, A&P, J.E. Dunn, and PCL, among others. We oppose the Jensen Amendment. The legislative process, the constituents and the stakeholders are encouraged by the legislature to work collaboratively to come to resolutions and a consensus on bills so that we don't have unintended consequences. The design professionals did do that and worked with industry groups to reach consensus on their bill. Last year, the stakeholders, including the AGC and the general contractors, worked to negotiate a compromise legislation related to broad form indemnity under Chapter 337. I was part of those negotiations, and those discussions specifically contemplated that the defense obligation would be treated differently than the indemnity obligation. And this is for a very important reason, because Section 337.05, which is where the legislation dealt with last session, was amended, and that's the agreements to insure portion of the statute, which specifically provides for indemnification agreements that are covered by insurance. And a fundamental principle of insurance is that you have a defense of potentially covered claims, and that's automatic. You don't get down to, at the time when the claim comes in, who's actually responsible or at fault for that. That insurance is readily available in the construction industry, and it's obtained daily by subcontractors, general contractors, owners, etc. HF 2090 is in a different section of the statutes in 604.21. This is for good reason, because HF 2090 is designed to address a discrete issue particular to design professionals who cannot get insurance to cover certain indemnification agreements. However, even HF 2090 in subdivision C specifically allows for defense and indemnity in those instances where insurance is available to cover those obligations. This is the same principle that was agreed to as part of the compromise legislation last session on Chapter 337. So allowing the Senate floor amendment to remain on the bill will cause the two statutes to be in conflict and will create great uncertainty in the industry, as was mentioned by one of the other insurance folks that testified. And it's going to undoubtedly result in endless costly litigation to determine what the meaning of the two statutes means. The second issue with the amendment that's a flaw is it has an open-ended retroactive provision that applies to all contracts that are in force or entered into on or after the date of final enactment. That provision, quite frankly, I believe is unconstitutional in that it would essentially rewrite every construction contract entered into in the past 30, 40, or 50 years after the fact. That is after all parties have negotiated and entered into contracts that comply with then existing law. This would throw the construction industry into chaos. There would be no way to know what your contracts mean, even if they were entered into under current law at the time. So we are extremely concerned with these issues, and we would ask that the Senate amendment be rejected. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Latz has a question for you.
With regard to your constitutionality question, on line 1.12 of the Senate file, the Senate version, if we were to delete in force on, would that address in force on, comma, or? Wouldn't that address the contracts clause question?
I mean, Chapter 337, when it was amended last session, was a prospective amendment on or after August 1st of 2013. So that was the way it was handled last year, and I think that's the way any further amendments should be handled, if at all.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you. As author of the bill last year, I just would like to ask you when this agreement took place, because I had no conversation about defense, the separation of duty to defend, or the separation of indemnity. The conversation we always had was that indemnify, defend, or hold harmless were connected, because the defend portion actually indicated that that would be, that insurance company would take over the defense because of the indemnification. So that's why I offered the amendment, is to make a clarification. So I'm just really wondering, because I never had conversations like that last year at all.
Mr. Valinsky.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jensen. I agree. I never had any, and we never had any specific conversations with you directly. I understand that. We had negotiations through Representative Atkins, and I know that at the end there were exchanges amongst all the parties. But during those negotiations, we discussed with the stakeholders, the MSA, and the other groups, the meaning of what we were doing, and as far as how the changes were being made to 337.05. And in those discussions, we specifically talked about that insurance, which is what 337.05 is based upon, insurance of indemnity agreements, includes defense. I mean, you cannot separate the two. Insurance, by its very nature, has a defense obligation with it. And so that is what the discussion was surrounding, and that's why we believe this was completely contemplated when we reached the negotiated compromise last session.
It was. I just wanted on record, it wasn't with me as author of the bill in the Senate, and everyone that was involved during that, whether it was in committee or when we worked on that language, that was never discussed during that time either from anybody that participated in that process. So I'm not sure who you negotiated with or what that came to, but it was not with me as author of the bill in the Senate. And it was never the intention that defend would not be. It was always the intention. In fact, on the floor, my discussion before we voted in the Senate included specific detail about how this would take care of the defending portion of what people were facing. So I just want that on record, and I want people on the committee to understand that was not a negotiated thing that happened.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm a little bit confused, because I thought the testifier just said that it goes without saying that the defense is built into an insurance policy. Is that what you, of this nature, is that what you said?
Yes.
Mr. Valinsky.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, that is the premise of 337.05, which is the section that was amended last session, is that agreements to insure indemnity is contemplated by that section. Insurance, which means you can't have that type of indemnity if you can't insure it. And if you can insure it, that automatically includes a defense obligation. Insurance, by its nature, includes defensive claims.
So, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what you're trying to say then is that this language isn't necessary? Is that what you're trying to say?
Mr. Valinsky.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, correct. That is what we're saying, that this amendment, in fact, would actually confuse and make Chapter 337 internally inconsistent, because that is part of 337.05 as far as the agreement to insure indemnification agreements.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. Then I would like to ask Dominique to come back down and if I could have... And just ask if that is the way you see that this as well. And so where is the confusion then? Why are we here if it's, you know, assumed that that's part of the...
Mr. Spizzetto.
Madam Chairman, Dominic Spizzetto, independent insurance agents. I would say in a perfect world, this would not be an issue. I think the issue arose after the effective date of last year's legislation, where some... the contracts were suggesting that the anti-indemnity provision did not apply to defense costs and thereby would be separating it from the duty to insure. So in the way we look at it, and I don't necessarily disagree with this man's presentation, other than the fact that some have interpreted it differently. So there seems to be a lot of confusion out in the marketplace on what was really meant by last year's legislation. We are of the opinion that defense costs and the duty to defend for any damages or awards are all part of the same policy. That's not to say that if you pass this legislation without this and that duty to defend becomes an issue, we'll figure out a way to provide insurance for it, but it's just going to create a lot of problems and confusion in the marketplace.
Representative Scott.
So is this a trial lawyer's dream come true then? Or Or could it potentially
Mr.
be?
Mr. Spizzetto or Mr. Walensky, if you'd like to answer that question.
I would say yes. If the amendment is added, I believe it is going to be a trial lawyer's dream come true. And I used to be a trial lawyer, so full disclosure. but the fact of the matter is that it will create an internal inconsistency in the statute that will have to be litigated probably over and over again.
Mr. Spizzetto, did you have a different opinion on that?
Madam Chairman, representing the insurance agents, we generally like trial lawyers because they create needs for us to go out and sell policies to protect, so I'm not here to castigate that. But I think the point is well taken that this is going to create a lot of confusion, lawsuits, and court cases. You can hopefully alleviate that by giving us better direction on what you meant last year.
I think, Representative Scott, I hear two different perspectives on the language. We have Joel Carlson, who'd like to testify to this point, but then we have Mr. Straczynski, and will you please raise your hand in the audience if you would still like to testify this evening so I know how many people are left after Mr. Straczynski. Just Mr. Straczynski. Okay, Mr. Carlson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and the trial lawyers are in the House. And I just want the committee to know that our association has supported all of the efforts in the last probably 6 or 7 years that the legislature has undertaken to address these problems of contractually shifting obligations for someone else's negligence. This is not the first time you've addressed this. The first bill that I'm aware of that the legislature adopted was actually vetoed by Governor Pawlenty and then subsequently signed by Governor Dayton. It's section 221.87, and that deals with indemnification agreements for the trucking industry between truckers and shippers. And if you look at that section, you'll see that the duty to defend, hold harmless, and indemnify are all in one phrase. The bill you have before you, the underlying bill, not the amendment, includes the duty to defend, hold harmless, and indemnify. We've supported all of those bills because we think it's unfair that you can simply immunize yourself contractually from your own conduct. We weren't part of the specific agreement or discussions that happened. Senator Jensen contacted me about this problem last fall, and I would suggest to the committee that the duty to defend is integral to holding someone harmless, and you can't have one without the other. And when they say we can develop a policy to make a contractor simply defend a general contractor for their negligent conduct, they probably can. But that is not the current status of the law today. And I would say just not the opposite of the previous witness, but I would say that the language between the amendment and the underlying bill are inconsistent because the underlying bill simply requires defend, hold harmless, and indemnify. That's what Senator Jensen's amendment just picks up, as do all the other statutes that deal with this. And so we don't have a particular dog in the fight other than we don't want people to be able to shift their negligence, and we just believe, just as a matter of law, that you cannot get to a duty to defend without an underlying ability to hold them harmless. If you're going to put the contractor in a situation of defending a case, the subcontractor of defending a case where they can't settle it, they have to defend someone else, but they're not responsible by statute, they're not responsible for their negligent conduct, yet now I have to defend you for that conduct. How do you settle that? How do you deal with that? And what is the underlying obligation from the subcontractor's lawyer to the general contractor's desire to not be held accountable for the conduct which the subcontractor cannot be held accountable for? It just simply is internally confused for us. I think that duty to defend needs to be in there whether you fix it now or later. We're not trying to break anyone's agreement, whatever they made. We weren't aware of it. But you have to get that in there at some point because it just doesn't make sense without it. So I think what Dominic said is right. If you want to make it clear, you know, you'd support what the Senate did. We're not asking you to do that, but I think that's the right course to make it clear. happy to answer questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions, other questions for Mr. Carlson? Okay, next we'll have Mr. Straczynski. Our leadership will be very happy if we're on the floor on time, too.
Madam Chair, I've got 45 minutes of prepared remarks, however. I can tell the governor you'll all be late tonight.
Hey, my original plan was to show up at 10 to 7, but Peter advised me that might not be the smartest thing to do. Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Electrical Association, about 600 rural, primarily, electrical contractors, small electrical contractors who generally act as subcontractors on an awful lot of projects. And we've worked on these issues over a number of years. I was involved in all the discussions last year and negotiations, and there were several hours of hearings on this particular matter, including in judiciary. I think we were in judiciary, Senate, at least twice last year, as well as House Judiciary. We talked about all these things, and you know, when you're trying to ensure, it's very clear, the legislature said you must insure for your own risk. I don't have to pay for the insurance for the risk of others. That you have to, why would you then say it's okay to, I've got to pay for your defense? We think that's very inconsistent. I remember discussions about this issue last year, and I was under the impression it was all addressed and included. Surprised to see that it, some people have interpreted and put into contracts that you must provide a separate, have a separate clause saying I must defend somebody else's for their own risk, for their own mistake. So anyhow, I think it's common sense that you just accept this particular amendment, the Jensen Amendment, the Senate version of this. It's consistent with what we, I thought we certainly did last year. It'd be inconsistent to do anything other than that. And I think, Madam Chair, it'll take your bill, which is an excellent bill, the underlying bill, and make it even better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Any other people who took the trouble to come here tonight who would like to testify in front of the committee? Okay, it's my plan for us to adjourn and not take action this evening on the matter. Senator Latz and I didn't have an opportunity to talk. In the Energy Policy Committee, it's always been my practice to hear an issue and then take a vote on a subsequent gathering so that members have a time to contact people offline and ask questions and maybe speak amongst ourselves about our thoughts. I'll just tell you that, you know, Senator Jensen and I had a nice conversation in the cafeteria, and I was willing to help Senator Jensen out if there was peace in the valley, because I've been working on the underlying legislation for at least 5 years, and we finally got peace in the valley as to that part of it. So I'm reluctant to disrupt my peace in the valley with a provision that doesn't quite have that yet. So I think we'll let you know when we plan to reconvene, but I think for now I plan to adjourn. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Representative Ortman, and for having this hearing and allowing everyone the opportunity to talk about this. The reason that I offered the amendment, and I chose to do that and talked to authors, was because of the clarity and the confusion that's out there in this particular issue. And if we don't take action this year, if we can't find a way to do that, there is going to be a lot of disruption for a lot of businesses and for a lot of people, because we didn't make it clear last year, other than that we were absolutely clear that we felt that the financial responsibility for people's own negligent acts was the responsibility of them. And that has been consistent throughout this traveling of this particular issue. And I know that it causes some anxiety in your particular bill, but your bill also has defend, and there's a reason for that, and I understand that. So I hope you think about it, and everyone on the committee can think about it, about what it means to make sure that that clarity is available for everyone involved, including insurance agents and generals, whoever is the indemnee or the indemnitor or whatever. We have to understand, and those people have to be able to understand what they're going to be responsible for, because if they're going to end up being personally liable for something because we didn't clarify in legislation and make it very clear and kept it vague, I can't not try to fix it, because we did it last year and we have to fix it. So I appreciate, though, the time and allowing people to testify.
And I appreciate that, too. Senator Jensen, I'm new to your part of this issue. Chair Atkins handled all that last year, and I followed his lead, so I appreciate that folks have taken the time to educate us. you know, my real effort over the 5 years I've been working on the other piece is that there's no commercially available insurance to provide that indemnification. And so that was kind of the, yeah. It was this impossibility that we were trying to address. Yeah. And I think there's kind of an open question based on the conflicting testimony tonight of whether this is insurable or not insurable. Yeah. So I appreciate that people shared testimony with us tonight. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would go to Senator Jensen. Was there a bill introduced this session to make this fix, a standalone bill?
There was a standalone bill that was introduced in both the House and the Senate.
And Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did either one, or Senator Jensen, get hearings?
No.
Okay.
Senator Letts, did you want to share any comments?
No, I'll just add that Senator Jensen's amendment, I don't know the exact number, I think it passed off the Senate floor like 54-0. Mm-hmm. So on behalf of the Senate position, we certainly have to take that into consideration as well. Was it a voice?
They can't.
You would know exactly. I don't recall.
Senator Jensen, do you recall? Was it a voice?
My amendment was a voice amendment. Okay. It was a voice amendment. There were no audible votes.
And then the underlying bill passed.
56 to, with the amendment in it, it passed unanimously. Who all was there? 56-0, yes. That's correct.
A lot of absences there in the Senate.
They were in conference committee.
They were in conference committee. Excuse.
All right. Any other members wish to make any statements on the record before we adjourn this evening? Well, I'd like to thank everybody for their patience, and this conference committee is adjourned.